Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I am Abubakar Jallo with your responses in the world of social media.
Coming up on the program, Gambia's new president Adama Barrow to be officially sworn in for the second time as new president, this time in the capital, Banjul.
There was a government here for 22 years. 22 years is a long time. So obviously there will be a lot of challenges to look at all the system and make a complete overhaul.
Moroccan King Mohammed VI arrived in Ghana for a three-day official visit to strengthen ties between his country and Ghana.
All in all, we are expecting that a total of about 26 MOUs between Ghana and Morocco will be signed, basically to advance the mutual interest of the two countries.
And I have some live responses of what you've been saying on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
That's right indeed, Abubakar. But first of all, let's listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. The two-day Munich Security Conference opened on Friday with world leaders, foreign and defence officials, hoping it will help them better assess the foreign policy goals of US President Donald Trump. US Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary of Defense James Mattis, and Secretary of Homeland Security John Kelly lead the US delegation at the conference, which brings together 30 heads of state and government and 80 foreign and defense ministers. Germany's Defence Minister Ursula von der Leyen told the meeting the United States should not put its allies and Russia on the same footing. There cannot be a policy of equidistance to allies and to those who openly question our values, our borders and international law, she said. President Trump said on Friday he was considering four people to serve as his top aide on security, including acting National Security Advisor Keith Kellogg. Trump offered the job to Vice Admiral Robert Hywood, but he turned it down on Thursday. Kellogg stepped into the role after Michael Flynn resigned on Monday amid controversy over his contacts with Russia. In Zimbabwe, Evan Mawarira, the pastor who led a popular protest movement against President Robert Mugabe last year, said on Friday he might stand in the 2018 election.
There's a lot of conversations around a pastor running for public office. I don't see anywhere where that is not allowed. I'm first a citizen before I am a pastor.
Mawarira faces charges of subverting the government and inciting public violence following his arrest at Harare Airport earlier this month. He is now on bail and his court case has been postponed until March the 16th. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. In South Sudan, a government minister has defected to the rebels, becoming the second high-level resignation in the war-ravaged nation this week. Reuters is reporting that Lieutenant General Gabriel Duap Nam, the Minister of Labour, has said that he would join the rebellion of former Vice President Riek Machar. Lieutenant General Thomas Cirillo Swaka, the Deputy Head of Logistics, resigned from the military 6 days ago, but did not say he was joining the rebels. Former British Prime Minister Tony Blair launched a new campaign on Friday urging British voters to speak out against leaving the European Union, saying the government's drive to exit at any cost could damage future generations.
The people voted without knowledge of the terms of Brexit. As these terms become clear, it is their right to change their mind.
Tony Blair won three elections as head of the Labour Party, but his reputation among the British public remains tarnished by the Iraq War. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
Welcome to Africa Link once again. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Abubakar Jallo.
We begin today's program in the Gambia, where President Adama Barrow will be officially sworn in for the second time with all the honors befitting a new leader. The first time he was sworn in was in Senegal, where he had sought sanctuary after defeated Yahya Jammeh had refused to leave power. The inauguration will also coincide with Gambia's 52nd Independence Day celebrations. Under Barrow's leadership, Gambians have high hopes that their country will regain the lost glory in the 22 years that Yahya Jammeh ruled the Gambia. Zipporah Nyambura reports.
Gambian residents are exuberant after more than two decades of life under Jammeh. And tomorrow's inauguration of Adama Barrow marks the first steps to democracy. Barrow, who is yet to address the nation publicly since his election, has vowed to create greater freedom in the tiny West African nation and reverse many of Jammeh's actions.
The greatest challenge is there was a government here for 22 years. 22 years is a long time. So obviously, there will be a lot of challenges to look at all the system and make a complete overhaul. I think that is a big challenge to my new government.
The new president is faced with a number of immediate challenges in a country that has long been torn by dictatorship and mistrust. Peter Penner, expert on the Gambia at the Michigan State University in the United States, says Barrow has a hard task to tackle.
And he comes in a very divided climate, a climate in which the people that he has to work with, the current parliament, is of the former ruling party, which is the Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, APRC.
Barrow's first task is getting a parliamentary majority, which he needs to accomplish his goals. Elections for a new parliament were supposed to take place in April, but following the January crisis, this is unlikely. Here is Peter Penner again.
Currently, there are no discussions about whether that date will be moved or how those elections will take place, but that's one of the key political hurdles that he has to deal with in the very short run.
Barrow's other immediate challenge is that he took over a government that appears to be broke. In the foreign policy arena, Barrow will also have to start picking up the pieces following the damage inflicted by the previous regime. Jammeh fell out with the European Union and it froze aid to the country in 2014. Despite the challenges, the new Gambian government can boast a number of progress. Barrow enjoys the backing of neighboring states. ECOWAS is expected to remain in the Gambia for at least 3 months. The country is back in the Commonwealth and plans for a return to the International Criminal Court, ICC, underway. The European Union Commissioner for International Cooperation and Development has promised the country a €75 million aid package. A further €150 million is expected to follow.
Zipporah Nyambura with that report.
Now, we've been asking some real-time responses there about Barrow's priority and what he should make now that he's going to be inaugurated tomorrow.
Yeah, please go ahead. Yeah.
And let me give you a real-time response there. We have Geoff Ali who said, make sure the dictator and his APRC party pay for what they've done to the Gambia. And we have Francisca Bonin who said, the Gambian population, social welfare, agriculture, hospitals and schools, those are the things he should prioritize. He should strengthen institutions in order to have a government based on transparency, accountability and the rule of law. And lastly, we have Didam Musa Goni, who said if he truly wants to rebuild Gambia, then he must purge out the remaining elements of the old order. That way he'll sanitize the system and lay a good foundation for a new Gambia.
Thanks indeed, Abu, for those brief comments. Please keep them flowing. Just visit our website, Facebook page rather, DW Africa. Now, Germany's Defense Minister Ursula von der Leyen has warned Washington against hurting European cohesion and seeking cordial relations with Russia behind the backs of its allies. She made the warning as the meeting of world leaders and foreign and defense officials from 70 countries convened in Munich for the International Security Conference. Europe has been rattled by US President Donald Trump's praise for Britain's decision to quit the EU, his criticism of NATO, and his softer approach towards Russia. And US Vice President Mike Pence, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, and Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly are leading the US delegation at the Munich Security Summit. A short while ago, before we came on air, I spoke to DW's Michelle Kufner on what transpired at the opening of the meeting.
Yes, really, we heard from US Defense Secretary Mattis' reiteration of what he was telling his other colleagues within NATO when he was in Brussels yesterday, basically that the Article 5, which is the very basis of NATO's defense assistance, was rock solid. That was the key message, and that surely was the message that many NATO partners wanted to hear in the room. He didn't really go that terribly much beyond what he said. He spoke only for about 7 minutes. He basically reiterated that nobody is safe without friends. So once again, reinforcing that message that also the United States would need partners in these challenging times. Ursula von der Leyen singled out defense issues that went way beyond conventional issues like in the battlefield. She mentioned cybersecurity as a key threat. And both leaders said that they saw NATO as a defense of the Western free way of life.
We've been hearing about, grave concerns over transatlantic ties that might overshadow the conference. What are some of these concerns anyway?
Yes, well, the big question mark is what does it mean in actual terms when Donald Trump says America first? How does that filter through not just to NATO? I mean, that's something where partners have sought and have to a very large degree received reassurances now, certainly from the U.S. Secretary of Defense. But will further investment in NATO be conditional? What kind of partner will the U.S. prove to be in the future? And what does it mean when the U.S. Secretary of State Tillerson says that if it was in America's interest, they could envisage working on certain areas with Russia? That's something that would certainly have implications on the world order. And so there are still many, many question marks hanging up in the air here. And this also explains why there's such huge interest in any American, including senators who are speaking here, what comments are coming out of Washington, both on the side of the new Trump administration, but also on the side of those who may be critical to the incoming president.
DW's Michelle Kufuna at the Munich Security Conference. The Moroccan monarch, King Mohammed VI, is in Ghana for a three-day official visit aimed at deepening relations between Ghana and the Kingdom of Morocco. His visit is expected to present the two countries with opportunities to define new areas of cooperation for mutual interest. President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo will hold bilateral talks with King Mohammed, after which Ghana and Morocco will sign a memorandum of understanding. From Accra, Isaac Kalechi sent this report.
The meeting between the Moroccan King Mohammed VI and Ghana's President Akufo-Addo in Accra emphasized strengthened ties between the two countries. According to the Director of Communications at the Presidency, Eugene Ayin, several business partnership deals will be signed before the King leaves.
All in all, we are expecting that a total of about 26 MOUs between Ghana and Morocco will be signed, basically to advance the mutual interest of the two countries. The Moroccan King would also be decorated with our highest national award, which is the Companion of the Star of Ghana. The King also has other engagements in the capital.
Several companies of Moroccan origin are currently operating in Ghana. Among them is a huge cement manufacturing plant, Cimafric, established recently. The King has made similar trips to 21 countries. Morocco was readmitted to the African Union in January during the 28th AU summit in Addis Ababa.
Isaac Kalechi with that report.
Now, I have a response there, Isaac. Bello Ishuyaka said, "We hope the visit of Morocco's king to Ghana will build the strongest relationship between the two countries and also bring development to the economies of the two countries."
Yeah, indeed, of course, wherever the king goes, he moves with a big delegation, send up, different memorandums of understanding.
Absolutely.
About cooperation, yeah.
Indeed. Now, let's go back to some responses there to Ghana. That is, to the Gambia, I'm sorry, people who have basically been talking
about Barrow's inauguration to tomorrow.
Indeed, yeah, and what they wish for Barrow to concentrate on. David Day said he wants national reconciliation to be his first agenda, and we have Rilwano Ibrahim who said, "I hope Gambian President Adama Barrow will fulfill the promises he made during the campaign election." And we have Abdul Aziz Adamu Fira who said, "I want the Gambian president to fulfill his promises to the Gambian people."
And one of them is to undo all that Yahya Jammeh did. Anyway, this is a story that we keep on monitoring. Please send them coming and we'll read them whenever we can. In case you've just joined us, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program straight from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I am Abubakar Jallo with topics trending on social media.
Indeed. Coming up, an increase in oil production in Libya compared to recent years when the country was rocked by war.
Actually, we have three or four. Now we are doing repairs to them. Hopefully, in 2 months' time, we will get them back in service.
And I have some additional responses to Cameroon and the ongoing friction between the state and secessionists in the west and southwest of the country.
Looking forward to that. We'll also tell you about the upcoming crucial matches this weekend in the Bundesliga. But first, oil production in Libya has increased in recent weeks from 250,000 barrels per day in mid-2016 to more than 700,000 barrels per day as we speak of now. This sounds like good news for the city Benson that is home to more than 70% of Libya's oil reserves. Since mid-2013, petroleum sites had been blocked by Federalists Ibrahim Jedran. But in September, General Khalifa Haftar's forces regained control of the reserves. This story of Marilyn Dumas is now being presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
The oil terminal of Asidra has come back to life. It currently receives 80,000 barrels a day, contrary to recent months when it didn't receive even a barrel on a single day. In December 2014, Fajr Libya, the Libyan Western Brigade Coalition, tried to take over the site. And because of the fighting, many oil tanks were set on fire. But now the reconstruction of some is underway, as Ibrahim Malouf, site supervisor, explains.
Actually, we have three or four. Now we are doing repairs to them. Hopefully, in 2 months' time, we will get them back in service.
Seven tanks were totally destroyed, which limits storage capacity. Production has also been affected since three oil fields have totally stopped. General Mohamed Amuda, who is in charge of security of the zone, explained that in 2015, the Jalu, Mabruk and Dara fields were attacked and ransacked by the Islamic State group. They have now been abandoned.
We will not rest from securing the place, even though it is an immense area in the middle of the desert. We are sending patrols into this area so we can guarantee that nobody uses these oil fields and that they remain safe.
Security is a big concern in this desert region that serves as a border between the forces in eastern and western Libya, but also shelters terrorists. At the end of last year, the Asidra terminal was hit again, but fortunately the rocket fire didn't hit its target, as Ibrahim Malouf further explains.
A rocket landed right in front of this building. If I had fallen here, it would have been over for Waha.
Another sticking problem that affects oil production is the revenue generated. Nagi El Maghrabi, head of the Libyan East Oil Company, complains about the poor distribution of oil revenues.
The income goes to a foreign bank and then it is transferred to the central bank based in Tripoli. This is a problem because it is controlled by the authorities in Tripoli, who then use it according to their own plans and agenda.
Under these conditions, some stakeholders intend to block foreign companies that work with Tripoli and to redirect the oil revenues to other bank accounts.
Eunice Wanjiru with that report.
Blog report.
And now, our portrait of African bloggers. In this week's blog report, we go to Nigeria and meet Kingsley Iweka. He is a young blogger and an entrepreneur who uses the website Africa on the Rise to highlight issues across the African continent. Kingsley's blog was recently named Best Blog in Africa for 2016. And he joined me now earlier. He joined me on the line from Lagos to talk about his work and his blog, Africa on the Rise.
What we do is to highlight only the good news, only the positive stuff coming out from the continent, especially focusing on young individuals who are doing phenomenal work.
Talking about negative portrayal there of Africa, you've said that there is a great disconnect between Western perceptions and changing realities in Africa. What do you mean by that?
There's not a lot of media focus on the positive stories from Africa. What we find, especially from Western media, is a lot of emphasis on negative aspects, negative stories, negative situations in the continent, and the opinion that that is not the only thing that Africa has got going for it. That's not the only thing that is happening. There are a lot of other positive stories that should be propagated, that should be emphasized and reviewed, and they align very well with the focus of the platform. We publish them. Yeah, so it's a very small team, but we are able to get as much done as we are able to. We believe that it's really important that we tell the stories, and it's our responsibility to do this, hence the commitment that we all put into the work that we do at Africa on the Right.
From where you are based in Nigeria, you guys have been doing tremendous work. Quite recently, you received an award as the best blog in Africa. What does this accolade mean for your work?
Yeah, I mean, it's very encouraging, for me personally, and that has also encouraged the team that I work with. You know, in line with that award, I was actually on the phone with Bill Gates, who Foundation sponsored the African Blogger Award last year, which you're right, African on the Rise actually won two awards. They won the main category, which is top blog in Africa, and also the best social issues and active citizenship blog in Africa. You know, so that was very humbling as well as encouraging and inspiring for me and the team. It means that the work that we're doing is not only important, but is also starting to be recognized, and the platform is beginning to be identified with as an important force and influence for the Africa Rising narrative. So yeah, I'm very grateful to the African Blogger Awards for recognizing the work that we do.
So do you receive some sort of support from the Bill Gates Foundation now that you've received this award, or do you also receive funding from any other development organization in Africa?
The African Blogger Award didn't necessarily come with financial benefits, even though we appreciate the award nonetheless. What it has done for us is it has given us some exposure and some interest from different areas and regions across Africa. We are open, obviously, to support from foundations or organizations that believe in the work that we do. But so far, this is how we have been able to run the operations that keep the platform going.
That was Kingsley Iweka, a Nigerian blogger with the website Africa on the Rise, speaking to me earlier on the line from Lagos. We apologize for the poor quality of the telephone line.
Well, it's now time to talk about sports, and we are joined by DW Sports editor from the Hausa service, Ahmed Salisu, who will start by telling us the crucial Bundesliga fixtures for this Saturday.
Well, I would say the star match is going to be between Bayern Munich and, of course, Hertha Berlin. You know, wherever Munich is, people put their eyes on that, being the first team on the table. And then they watch out for whatever the team they are meeting is going to come up with. And this time around, it is Hertha Berlin, and they are going to play the game in Berlin. So a lot of people are really concentrating, or so to say, waiting for this great match, especially after what Munich did to Arsenal a few days ago.
Yeah, it's like they're on fire.
That's right. So people are thinking that with the energy they had, I mean, trashing Arsenal 5-1, and then this time around they are meeting Hertha Berlin. So definitely, is the momentum going to be maintained, or how will things really pair up?
Yeah, Hertha Berlin is also, to upgrade from the sixth position and go to the third position in case it wins this match. How easy is it going to be, for it, especially that they're playing, from the home ground?
Well, there are quite a number of things, Isaac, to take a look at. Number one, Hertha Berlin is playing at home, and they are on the sixth position on the table, and they have quite a good players, but then you cannot compare their strength with Bayern Munich. I mean, for obvious reasons, but football always is a different matter when it comes to the
pitch. Yes, we've had surprises before. Ingolstadt playing, you know, it, you know, it's bottomed, you know, at the end.
That's right.
And you remember when it played with Leipzig, and you know,
yeah, and it
surprised.
Was, and the surprising thing is, Ingolstadt were the visitors.
Were the visitors.
And they took away two good goals in Leipzig. You never can say what's going to happen. But then, on the surface, you could tell that you cannot match the strength of the two teams. I mean, they are operating on different channels.
Yes, we can't end, you know, this segment without talking about, of course, that Champions League match, you know, Bayern Munich versus Arsenal, and a good thrashing of 5-1. I mean, it was a very big disappointment to Arsenal fans, isn't it? Especially that on your Facebook page.
It was, honestly speaking, because I monitored a lot of inflow of messages from our users, and people are saying, yeah, we're going to Munich and then we're going to take the away goal, this, this and that. But at the end of the day, look at what happened, 5-1. I mean, people were really disappointed, but some of them were of the opinion that, okay, it's because they have this home support, while others were saying, no, Munich is so strong that they can score more than 5 goals, I mean, against Arsenal. Especially going by what Arsenal has been up to in this season and the previous ones, we could tell that there's a lot, I mean, happening in that team. They are not performing the way they should be performing, considering what they have done in the previous years, Isaac.
DW's sports editor from the Hausa Service, Ahmed Salisu, talking about the Bundesliga fixtures. Over to you, Abu.
Now, before I take you to your responses to Cameroon, let me first take you back to South Africa, where President Jacob Zuma returned to Parliament a week after a very chaotic scene in Parliament during his State of the Nation address.
Mm-hmm.
This time
there were no fights or clashes with the EFF.
It turns out a lot of those who were considered rowdy were actually secured and taken out of the building. Ijoma from Cameroon said, well, in Cameroon, the president has never been to the parliament. He makes decisions in his house and sends parliament to be adopted into law. Quite ridiculous that.
Okay, yeah, that's
okay.
It, yeah.
All right, now let's go to Cameroon. First of all, before Cameroon again, let's talk about hunger and starvation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the World Food Programme warned that more than 20 million people are at risk of dying from starvation within the next 6 months. And then we have Charles Ongole, who said drought and famine across Uganda has every reason of climate vulnerability like the surrounding region. However, our predicament isn't helped by the regime of President Yoweri Museveni, whose parliamentary majority is controlled by his NRM party. We have Wanu Ibrahim Uba, who said, I think African leaders should stand up to fight against militants or insurgents to bring the end of immigrants and refugees. And we have Ambas Rose, who said, for how long is the continent of plenty going to exist on handout from poorer countries? I feel so sick. Now, let's take you to your responses now in Cameroon,
Yeah, Cameroon, we've always been promising our listeners there and our Facebook fans that we shall always read their comments whenever we can. So, Abu, please.
Indeed, we've actually been pushed to an extent where most of our followers and our online readers, they're expecting us to report a lot more
they're
Cameroon
really very active,
to it.
Yeah.
So we always like to bring the stories across. Now, this Cameroonian activist, Wilfred Tassang, who's basically been saying that French Cameroon and English Cameroon cannot be together anymore, made a video which he sent to us and we published, and we had a lot of responses to that. Gilbert Nshutu said, we are suffering under the colonial government of Biya. The world watches without any actions. Southern Cameroon is an independent country and the world must think about restoring her independence that has been stolen by LRC. Henry Ndum said, it's a shame. It's so shameful to hear this from the government, who are the perpetrators of the violence. We have made public videos of the atrocities of the government and its forces. Let them do same to prove their case. Well,
yeah,
it's up to them.
Yeah,
right?
our promise is always, you know, to read these comments, you know, those that you post on our Facebook page. And
indeed,
of course, it's good that, you know, you visit our page as well, dw.com/Africa. Go ahead, Abu.
Exactly.
Please.
One final response there from Ba Mfon, who said, to every Cameroonian of good faith, it is crystal clear that the tyrannical regime of Biya is not willing for any genuine solution for the ongoing crisis. This is the most corrupt government in the world. I keep doubting how they don't occupy the position of the most corrupt country on Transparency International's rating. Instead of dialogue with protesters, the government is trying all means possible to show to the outside world that everything is good in the country, which is not the case.
These comments are so many, but I'm afraid we have to leave it there at that, please. More news and fascinating videos, visit our website, dw.com/Africa.
And also check our Facebook page, DW Africa.
From me, Isaac Mugabe.
And Abubakar Jalo.
And the rest of the team with me in the studios, have a splendid weekend ahead.